Hello and welcome to Timmy G's Tyre Power Time Machine. I can't believe it. The air conditioner's broken in it. We're a job at this time. And I've got this bloke with me. This is an incredible record. Have a listen to this bloke. 159 games, 5 flags, 88, 89, 90, 92, 94, 89 goals and 217 points. Ladies and gentlemen, David, Donny Osmond, how are you, mate?
I'm well, thanks, Tim.
Good great. To see you. I know we can't here. Shake
I
think hands.
I don't know where you pulled that stat from, yes.
Oh, dear, but we do get onto some of your goal kicking because, man, oh, man, your courage, your marking, and then sometimes your kicking for goal just could have cost you a Jack Hardy medal. We're going to get onto that a bit later on. But first of all, David, welcome. I need a bit of background on you because I think the Timmy G Tyre Power Time Machine viewers out there, which is now, I believe, global. It's gone global.
Gone viral.
Viral is probably a better word. Yeah. But they don't, you know, sometimes they don't know where our famous players come from. But you're a local product, but there's a lot more to you. So give us a bit of an idea on the background, David.
Yeah, well, I grew up initially in Largs Bay for a few years, then moved to Simpful Park.
Yes.
And so played for both Largs Bay Primary, Simpful Park Primary School.
Yeah.
And then Simpful Park Footy Club, where I met the young Tim Jennifer.
Did you?
Yeah. So we played at Semi Parks, the old Egg and Sauce, because we were red and yellow initially.
Yeah, that's
and,
right, Egg and Sauce.
So we played what, under 12s, 14s, 16s together.
Yeah, I was playing A grade by then.
you came here. You came with a Hallowed out, and you were younger than me, but you were always a step ahead.
I couldn't wait for you. Frankly, David. But in that childhood, what made you take up footy? Because you've got a brother, but he's younger. Sister, she's younger.
Yep,
so
what
was footy?
Dad was a bit of an all-rounder. He loved footy. He was a bit of an athlete as well. And a scientist as well.
We'll get on to that. Yeah,
so he was just encouraging us for any sport, but I think footy. And both my grandpas loved Port Adelaide. They were both Lefevre Peninsula
people,
Huttons and the Thompsons. But my grandpa Thompson was a Portonian, was a local earth mover. He used to do some jobs for the club I think got his Portonian membership, bit of a contra deal.
Contra back then, I love it.
So he had his tickets so since I was about 7 years old, tickets in the grandstand for me and my younger brother, and he'd bring us to all the Port games.
So hang on, you're at the gravy as well. Like, you got your snout in a trough.
No corporate functions, but I had my tickets next to the aisle.
So you're bludgeoning off the grandfather who's working.
Well, he's looking after his grandson and giving me the passion and taste for Port Adelaide.
Started
back then.
Well done, Mr. Thompson.
So then I wanted to play footy and always had that dream of playing for Port Adelaide from an early age.
You've got a lot of famous people in your family because your grandfather on the Hutton side, he was a well-known photographer. I think there was a bit in the advertising not long ago, a whole double-page spread on what he used to do and the photos he used to take. I mean, he was Port Adelaide's resident photographer, wasn't he?
Yeah, so George Hutton, at one stage, he had a studio in the port. For years, he had a studio on Semaphore Road on the corner of Woolner Road.
Yeah.
Then he operated from home in Hannay Street, Largs Bay. But amazing the amount of people I run into around the club who he took their wedding photos or their school photos or their sports club photos. Yeah. So he was the local professional photographer from the late 1920s through to the 1970s, 80s, really.
And correct me if I'm wrong, David, and I seldom am. But just off Semaphore Road, there's a new development. There's actually a street named after him, is that right?
Yes, Hutton Place.
Hutton Place.
You have done your homework. Impressive, Mr. Jennifer.
Thank you very much. But Hutton Place, and did one of our past players, did Mark Tyler buy a house in Hutton Place?
Yeah,
he did, Tyler's. He did, didn't he?
Yeah. I think he bought it because he wanted to live in the street named after me.
Oh, I love it. That's great. Now, let's get on to your famous father because I knew you, as you said, we played together at Semaphore Park as kids, all the rest of it. Come here, played junior footy with you, senior footy with you. Then you've invited me around to your house, Semaphore Park. Yes. We're going to play cricket, as we did.
Yeah, we used to have to play cricket out
massive
the front.
Cricket games. Yeah. You know, about 20 of the boys there and all the partners, and we'd play cricket all day and have a barbie and all that. And I walked in, I looked at your dad, and I thought, geez, I know that bloke. Geez, I know that bloke. Kept looking at him. Bugger me, it's Dean off the Curiosity Show. I never knew. Never knew until we finally came over.
Really? So when we played at some... I was a quiet lad.
Very. So, yeah. I'm glad you've chirped up a bit. But yeah, you never really mentioned it. And of
No. I think you used to, one, take it for granted. I didn't realise how popular the show was, really, back in the 70s and 80s.
Now, that seriously is a global show, that one, wasn't it?
Yeah, did went to 17 countries and ran for 17 years. And then he moved on to doing science segments on Hey Hey Saturday after that.
He did too. Yeah. He was on Hey Hey.
Yeah, he used to do the zany stuff with Daryl and Wilbur and Red,
what I loved when we come around your house, we'd all be there and, you know, we might have a break at half time, having a few cans and all the rest of it. And then he'd just stroll out and he'd go, boys, here you going? And around and go, yeah, Dino, hey, mate. And we were always, you know, excited about seeing him. You weren't too excited about seeing him. It's your dad. But then we said, hey, man, I'd say, how does that work? Let me show you.
I'm glad you asked.
Out come the table, bang, the thing, and off we go. And I loved it, mate, because he loved it. He was passionate,
and he loved someone showing a bit of interest.
Yeah.
And still does. He's still loves that passion for science, and he still does science shows at schools. Yeah. Actually, he did one for our staff at the Port Adelaide staff meeting. When we'd been doing our online Zoom meetings to break things up a little bit. Did the old tablecloth trick.
Incredibly intelligent bloke. Are you his son?
There we go.
I just had to ask.
Very good. We'll pay you that one.
You're ignoring that. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
I am.
So, tell us about your journey to Alban. When did you first come? Did you get invited? Did you have to try out? What did you have to do?
No, I just came out. The first year, so what would have been my first year under 17s, I came out and a few of us from Semi Parks came out. I think you were invited out, but some of us weren't. We just rocked up.
Good call.
But we got to do a pre-season. But I got told to come back and try again next year. I had another year, 17s. My first year, 17s, I didn't make it to the end of the pre-season.
Okay.
Probably
a good call.
Yeah, I needed a bit more. I was probably a bit of a later developer, and I'd had a couple of years away overseas and stuff. But so I went back, had a year with Semi Parks, came back. Then I did get an invite the next year, probably because they had me on the list, yes. And came out that year and then played 17s for the full year. And then into 19s the next year.
Now in the 19s, tell me this. This is a bit of a story that I've heard bits of. But is there a game in the under 19s where you and Andrew Obst, four-time premiership player with Port Adelaide, five-time premiership player with Port Adelaide, are sitting on the bench in an under-19s game and hardly get a run? Is that true?
Yes, I think I might have. So come out of the under-17s and, we were sort of on the verge of making the top 18 or not. But we were on it must have been a trial game, I reckon, because it was an extended bench and we didn't get much of a run.
No.
And obviously thought,
I want
to be on the ground playing footy, so he went back to West Croydon.
Because we had a lot of trouble getting him out.
He'd come out and then suddenly wasn't really getting a go. And I hung in there and it ended up, opportunity in the next few weeks opened up and I sort of got a spot in the team and stayed there, where obviously it disappeared.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until a couple of years later that Russell...
Well, gee, yeah.
Was it 2 or 3 years later?
I think halfway through the 87 season.
Russell
convinced him to come and try, and of course...
Yeah, so this program would have been 83 or something. So Russell talked him back out a few years later.
Amazing. So we nearly lost him there for a month. But you, on the other hand, a bit like a bad smell.
Hung around.
Just hung around.
Well, you got it. Sometimes you got it.
And you just... Now, those early days, you and I obviously knew each other, and we'd go and do those senior pre-seasons.
When we were
17 sort of years of age and... How tough were they? They were so tough.
Yeah, up at Railways Oval and run around the Torrens and
I can remember
fitness
doing
coaches Ken Wally and Dave Arnfield yabbering in the background and
Arnfield probably.
You're not allowed to have a drink.
No, you were weak.
I remember a couple of times, once here and once run up Montefiore Hill, where you weren't allowed to have a drink until a specific time. They're feeding the players drinks, but weren't allowed to have a drink of water. And it was 38 degrees doing 2400s or something.
You were considered weak if you had a drink.
And I reckon Wayne Marnie grabbed the drink. or Rowan Smith, and they spotted it, and they, no one having a drink, you're doing the next eight or something. It was.
Yes, it was.
A coach would get sacked for making players do that.
They were running away or ahead of their time. No doubt about that.
They knew the importance of hydration.
Exactly. Yes, they did know the importance of hydration, but in another sphere. But you battled your way through. When did you finally play your first league game?
I had 2 years, 83 and 84 under 19s, but early on in the 84 season, Gary Treadray put me up to reserves. He was the under 19s coach. Yep. So moved up into the reserves and played the rest of the season in the 84 season in reserves. That was only about round four or five. And then 85 was the year where I first broke into the league side. So it was partway through, game at Alberton against South Adelaide. Probably about a third of the way through the season, and got the call up for my first league game. So that was a big thrill. So that was 85. For the next 2 years, I spent in and out, up and down, bit of injury, and really didn't consolidate a regular spot to 87. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And then 88 comes along, John Carr's coaching, but you're predominantly played defence in your career, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been mainly half back.
Yeah.
When I was playing in the, I'd had a couple of games on the wing. Under 19s, I sort of had a bit of a run in the midfield as well. But it tended to be, as
you
I
would have
went
been a big body midfielder, very Paddy Cripps like.
Yes, very, very much so.
Yeah, I reckon.
When Jack came, actually, I reckon I had a couple of niggly injuries early in the pre-season, and I'd gone from playing every game in 87 to I was sort of in and out league, reserves, injured, back through the reserves, back into the league, nearly until even the last minor round of 88, I was actually selected in the reserves.
Wow.
Rowan Smith and I were in the reserves.
Yeah. And, we spoke about Rowan's last head.
Yeah.
Was that game?
Yes. And I got a call up because the league were playing a double header. You would have been playing that one at Footy Park. And the reserves were playing out at Norwood Oval.
Correct.
Yeah, and I'd been playing okay in the league, and I reckon about three or four players came back, Marty Leslie and Steve Williams, and I got squeezed out, got the call from Jack to say, look, you're you've played well enough to stay on the team, but you just got to go back. And anyway, long story short, Steve Williams had a fitness test because I think he was coming off an ankle injury. Didn't make it. So on the morning, I was actually, my bag was packed. I was ready to jump in the car to drive to Norwood Oval when I got the call, you're on the bench in the league side.
Wow.
So that was the last minor round of 88. And I played on the bench for the whole first half. Came on because Jack didn't use his interchange very much.
Right, wasn't needed back then.
But we were down at half time, made a few changes. I came onto the wing because he'd started experimenting with on the wing and had Brian Fairclough doing it in the under 18.
Okay.
So 88 was my transition year from defence back onto the wing. And I came onto the wing and the whole team had a good second half. We came from behind to beat Norwood to win the minor premiership.
Correct.
And sort of didn't look back from there.
So you get into the grand final. And you're playing on a wing, not that familiar. You're confident? You're confident going in?
Yeah, I think Jack had that knack of giving you confidence and making you feel better than you were, or maybe he was getting you to play to your maximum ability. And he just had quiet little words, and he liked attacking wingmen. Like goal kicking wingman, as you said, I was a bit of a point kicking wingman, but he'd encourage you to just run and have shots of goal, and to have that defensive action when you needed it.
Yeah.
But he wanted you, and a stoppage and then sort of drift forward and create. And
funny because I always used to talk about Jack liked a slightly defensive wingman and a slightly attacking wingman. So I always thought that it was a Phil Harrison or a Simon Tregenza type player.
Nathan Buckley.
Attack, and a David Hutton would sort of defend. But I've watched a fair bit of your footage and I didn't see you go back at all.
I had the natural defensive
action,
but he tried to get the offence out of me. Yeah, so,
all right.
I think I gave that. But I did end up in the forward lines a bit too.
you mentioned there about your flurry of injuries. Now, let's go through some of the ridiculous injuries that you did incur. Now, One is your last game. Let's go right to the end and talk about your last game.
Yeah.
Your last game is the first game of 1995.
Mm-hmm.
It's my 250th, so I'm thinking, woo, this is going to be a great night.
Yep.
The boys are going to live for me.
It's a night game televised.
Footy
Park.
Launch of the Sandford season that year.
Yeah.
We get smashed by 95 points.
by Glenelg.
So they got a lot of money.
Yeah.
But you, at one stage, I remember seeing you running. And I thought, what's Hutt's done now? And then I thought, what is that coming off his... It looked like some tape was coming off the back of your Guernsey or something. It was your arm.
Yes, yeah.
What happened there?
I went to tackle Phil McGuinness, was playing for Glenelg, and we sort of corralled him. He went to dodge around me, and I went to change direction to lunge at him, and I slipped. It was a bit dewy.
Yeah.
I went to just put my arm out to... And it just went the wrong way. I dislocated my elbow. And
it was horrendous.
It's actually... I've got on video if you want to watch it again. You see it flap around my wife. Tonya still won't watch it.
We'll just insert it here. God, mate, it was horrendous. It was backwards, wasn't it?
Wow. So I looked down and you see me look down at my arm. I'm thinking, what's going on there? So.
But you've had some horrendous injuries. The one that really knocked you about at Norwood Oval where you planted your foot and the whole foot moved?
Yeah. I was in a tackling situation and someone must have... I think what happened, someone was standing on my foot as I got tackled and went down and I got a Liz Frank fracture, which is a textbook injury. The physios and doctors were very excited about it when I was down in the rooms. I wasn't very excited, but...
Come and have a look at this Liz Frank. It's unbelievable.
All the bones in the midfoot, the metatarsals, all popped out. So all five bones were dislocated in the middle of my foot.
What'd you say then? A
metatarsal.
Isn't that muesli?
Metamucil, you're thinking.
That's what your bloody foot looked like. It was incredible. Like, you couldn't do anything just normal.
No.
It always had to be extreme and, like you said, outside of the textbook, so all the doctors could come and have a look.
Yeah.
Now, there was one day here at Alban where you've copped a terrible knock. Now,
In the twos.
Was
in
it?
The reserves. Yeah, I was in the reserves.
You've got hit. Yep. And, as we'll talk about, I don't quite...
That's the blood vessel in my cheek.
But you couldn't just have a black eye or something. No. What happened to your face?
I had like an egg out on my cheek like this. It was just popped right out. I had to have scans for broken cheek. It wasn't anything broken. It was just
first
blood.
It was a contusion or something?
Yeah.
It looked like a third head.
Elephant man, I think.
It was quite horrendous. Yes. But you had some fun at my expense that particular evening.
Well, that was the reserves game, so I got cleared. It was okay, so we went back to the club afterwards. If we did, you'd played. We were against Sturt, and you'd played a big. You got concussed.
Yes.
Third quarter or last quarter?
Yeah, apparently, third quarter.
Timmy's been concussed and gone off. Come back on. You might have even got on.
No, it didn't come on.
You lied to the trainer, I reckon. They were trying to give you test questions and you were making stuff up and you convinced them to let you stay on. And he's kicked two goals in the last quarter to help seal the game. And so we were all having a laugh about it upstairs afterwards. And it must have been delayed concussion kicking in because we were sitting around with our wives, girlfriends and you kept looking around at me. And whenever you looked at me, you focused on the big egg on my head. What happened to you? And I explained what happened. Oh, in the reserves, I got the knock, and it's not too bad. Looks worse. And a minute later, you're saying that every time you turned, you'd ask me the same question, and then you were starting to say some bizarre things. So we were testing him out, and we made out that you were married to Ange, which you weren't at the time.
What a nightmare!
Yeah. you were going, when did I get married? Steve and him, some of the boys were just making up all these stories and you were just...
I better apologise, she watches these. But it was horrendous.
Yeah, and we were having a bit of fun. Then we realised, Timmy's not joking now. Ange decided to take you to the hospital and I think you spent the night in hospital.
She says to me that she was taking me and I said, I'm not going to hospital,
you weren't going to.
And she said, no, that's fine, no worries at all. And, good, all right. So then we drove and then... I said, where are we? She said, we're at the hospital. I said, oh, good. that was a rough night. But geez, you did have some injuries, mate, and you didn't know how to do it half-baked.
No, I did some good ones.
There was a night that I remember, and a lot of your friends will remember this, your 40th birthday. And I think it was the Grange Surf Club,
yes.
And, beautiful evening, everybody's there, having a drink, it's great fun. And then normally, you know, you might show some video footage or some old photos on your 40th. I just didn't realise it was a 3-day event. This video
people who did some very nice things for
it
me.
It was incredible, but the actual footage...
During the speeches, I had to call for an intermission.
It was unbelievable. I mean, we had to go get popcorn and everything and come back. It was just amazing. But the footage of your footy career, it just highlighted how many times you just got poleaxed. And I'm talking the old stiff arm poleaxed stuff when you go down.
I think Steve Williams put that video together with Alan Hinks.
Steve Williams was his brutal best when he said, if he didn't fumble, those things wouldn't happen.
Can't argue with that.
Geez, you're a courageous player, David. No doubt about that. Look, David, are you aware that it's times like this that we all need a little help from our friends? Eh?
I am.
Good.
Particularly times like this.
Good, because...
What friends are you talking?
Well, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, Tyre Power, they're here to help. Tyre Power is open for business, and the team are committed to helping our communities and essential services. So, new tyres, a wheel alignment, or an the free 5-minute tyre safety check are all at Tyre Power because they're here to help you, David. Just don't you misunderstand that. Now, still great savings on all the best brands. Stay safe on the roads during this time. Your local Tyre Power dealer is ready to help. There's one just around here, Port Road, Cheltenham. Get yourself around there after this, all right?
Beautiful. We'll do.
Oh, good. Excellent. All right. Now,
you sold me.
What's your nickname, Dave?
Huts.
No, it's not.
That's the main one.
That's the one most people know you by.
Donnie?
Donnie Osmond. You're always known as Donnie Osmond. For you younger viewers out there, and I know this is going globally around the world, just Google Donnie Osmond and have a look and just say that that's not the man. He's a beautiful man, a beautiful smile, and just a great bloke. But that has stuck too, hasn't it, over time?
It has. Well, not many people call me it now, except some of the old. It does come out.
It's a good name. 1989. It's sort of an infamous grand final, if you like, but we have a really dominant season. North Adelaide had a really dominant season. We've won 2 games each against each other. We come to the grand final. Should have been one of the greatest grand finals you've ever seen. As in, close game.
Yes.
Anything but.
No.
We kick 15-18, they kick 1-8 on a pretty miserable day. You, on a wing, how many shots of goal do you have?
6.
Shots of goal. That's good.
Yeah.
What did you return?
1-5.
You nearly outscored them. But you had a great day.
It was a very windy day.
How do you feel?
Might have kicked a couple out on the fourth.
You made 8 shots.
Although they might have not been shots on goal, but the kicking wasn't spot on that day.
But I tell you what, that is a lot of footing.
Mm.
That's a lot of footing, a lot of shots. You, this close to a Jack Adams, sure.
Oh, probably a little bit. If I've kicked 4, I then might have been in the mix.
Tell you what, you're in there. You had a good day though, didn't you?
Yeah, not too bad, but I wasn't alone. We had some dominant players all over the ground that day. So
it was an amazing team effort, wasn't it?
I think Scotty kicked another 5 or 6 in the grand final.
That's what he does.
Our midfield destroyed the Jarmans and...
The engine room.
Yeah.
I can't mention that. Mm. But that particular day, is that one of the best finals games you've played? Because you had heaps of it. I mean, can you remember a better game?
No, probably not. It was probably and would have just been nice to have finished off a bit better. And a couple of those only just missed too.
But of course.
A couple of them I did spray. But so it was good to be able to play in that one. Probably, 88 was great being the first. They've each got different stories, actually.
Did you feel, because I heard you mention that you cramped up in 88. I reckon we all did. I reckon we were so inexperienced and not understanding of what it takes that we all, a lot of us cramped up.
I'd never cramped up in a game, I don't think.
Well, there you go.
And 88 grand final, just in time on.
You should have been working hard.
But that was
quite the difference. From then on, we sort of had that belief and that experience, didn't we?
And Jack just had the gift to sort of to sell it to us that hey, we deserve to be here, and you know, we were better than any opposition. He wouldn't trade one of us for one of them. And
correct, that is correct.
But he really had you playing with confidence. So.
And was it 89 or 90 your most sort of consistent year without injuries, or?
Yeah, not 92 was
consistent.
Yeah, that was a consistent year. Mightn't have had as good. I think it was an average game in the grand final, but that was probably.
You're around. You're around probably. For 250 games, but you've missed probably 80.
Yeah. I missed quite a bit early in my career and late in my career. I had a good, 89 to 90, halfway through 93.
Yeah.
I hardly missed a game. And then 93, 94, 95, I had about three or four different things happen. So,
Just kept at you, didn't I?
Yeah.
Now, you always loved travel because early in your life, your dad actually took you to the States when you were young, weren't you? Because he went over to study, is that right?
Yeah, a couple of times when I was 6 years old, we went over for 2 years. He got his master's and his PhD at Indiana University. So I grew up, went to school there, came back with an American accent. And so I only really got into the footy when I was sort of 7, 8 years old when I came back from that.
Yeah, right.
And so it had a bit of a later, and that's when I started coming to the Port games with my grandpa.
Ah.
And then we went back for about 9 months in 1980. So I'd, when I'd been playing.
You're like nearly 15 or something.
Yeah, I was playing with you at Semaphore Park.
Yeah.
And I left halfway through the season because we went over for the second half of the year.
That's why we didn't.
He was on study leave.
Yeah.
So I missed the second half of the season, and the second half of year 10, came back and had to do a couple of tests and was able to slot back into year 11. But Dad had me working, homeschooling over there.
Wow.
And we visited a couple.
He's ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Yeah. We visited a couple of schools too on the travels. He was visiting different universities and children's television workshop. He worked there for a couple of months in New York. They're the people who make Sesame Street and all the education.
Absolutely.
Because he loved education, science and teaching and using TV to teach.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
So that gave you a love of travel or not?
Yeah. Well, I think that.
Because you've never stopped.
No. We like to do a bit of overseas. We've been back to America.
And you were very handy on our footy trips, let me tell you, because when we went on footy trips, it was pretty much, even regardless of what we got up to the night before, we would rely on you to make sure that we had an itinerary of sightseeing set up the next day, regardless of what we got up to the night before. But we did see some great things because
we did. We did. In 1988, we bought a car that sat six of us. And,
Yeah.
It was you, me, George, Fiaci, Steve Williams, Michael O'Brien, Owens. And we made sure that we were getting out seeing stuff. Had to drag some of you out of bed in the morning.
Thank the Lord for you
but,
now.
We saw a lot of LA and Tijuana, San Diego. And
it was good. I remember the next footy trip, you could only come for a few nights, which we were going to miss you.
Yes.
But put it this way, David had one night in Bangkok. Let me tell you about that. That's for another show. You nearly didn't make the flight.
Yeah.
You were very, very under the weather. But anywho, the great thing about that time was we had to do the fundraising, didn't we?
So yes, we did.
We had to do the fundraising, and there was only three signatures that could get money out of the trip fund account. It was myself, George Fiaci, and you. And the boys said that Tim and George aren't allowed to sign together.
Yes.
David Hutton always has to be the primary signatory. That's how well trusted you were amongst the group.
Probably a bit of confidence shining from the boys. But gave me a few headaches trying to work out with you two, but we sorted it out.
Oh, I love it. Now, post your footy career, because injuries ravish you and you end up having to finish the game, but you were involved in that time where Port Adelaide became an SNFL side, an AFL side.
Mm.
You become the CEO of the Maggies.
Mm.
How hard was that gig at that time, and what do you think you got out of it?
It was a real challenge. I'd been out of playing for a year. I'd been on the board, so getting a feel for how the club works. Ready for the setup so it was late 96, I took over from Brian Cunningham, had already moved across to set everything up at the Power. Bob Clayton was his interim general manager, but he was then moving across to take on a footy management role.
Yeah.
And so I came in just the week after the grand final, the 96 grand final. But we had to be out of Alberton that week, out of the offices. We were in the process of setting up Ethelton as our change rooms and training ground. And we bought a chicken, chicken shop up on the corner of Brown Place
right,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
And had to convert that to our offices. We had people, Kenny McLeavy, Warren Rogers, those guys coming out of the woodwork just helping us still that the building and renovation. So we were managing that. We knew we couldn't train at Athelton because a whole lot of renos had to happen till just before the season. So we had to organise the whole pre-season with a fairly new coach, Steve Williams.
Yeah.
And Craig Ebert, fitness coach, had to design pre-season away from here.
Big challenges.
Yeah. And then I had to negotiate contracts with all my teammates who were hanging in there playing like yourself and the Fiarchis and Rowan Smiths and Dylan. But
you weren't very kind, were you?
I didn't have a lot to play with, but everyone was really good with it and understanding, and people and some of our coterie members stuck with us and sponsors, and it was so it was a tough time. But and I was only 31, I think, so it was.
So we play in the next three grand finals, win two, so 98 and 99. Steve coaches your. CEO, do you take credit for those?
I try to, but Steve then tries to, and then Al Gill will step in. He was chair of the selectors, and
everybody.
And then
our captains
might step up yourself from Darren Borlase. So
Brownie,
true team effort, I think.
Tim. Yeah, it certainly was, no doubt about
it. But it was
that
very pleasing to we withstood all that change and were still able to win another couple of premierships. Yeah.
So then later on, you become. What was the role called? I think welfare officer.
Yeah, player welfare and development manager.
That's right. At the power at the time.
It was under 99. Yeah.
And that must have been an incredible era as well, because that's the most winningest period of our AFL careers. 01, 02, 03, 04, isn't it? And that amazing time, you're doing that role with some of the great characters of our footy club who are all. A lot of them are 04 premiership heroes.
Yeah.
Must have been a great time.
Look, it was to got asked to look at that role over there and coming in on board with Choco again, so sort of reuniting with him, and it was a great team. He had a good team of coaches, players just sort of hanging off to learn what they could.
You had a dual role though. You had a match day role.
Yeah, well, when I took on the job, it was really an off-field role, looking after all the players off-field, housing, study, work, whatever they do, how they balance everything.
Yeah.
And then helping out with Rob Snowden and the team with some of the footy administration or logistics of travel and whatever. But then Choco asked me to come to the coach's box, and I did a combination of stuff, the match-up board and the communications from box to bench.
Yeah.
And so did that.
Let's talk about that.
I thought you might want to talk a bit further about that.
Let's talk about it, because the idea is that if you've got the headsets on and you are communicating to the bench, that you can actually hear them and they can hear you. That's probably the idea of it, isn't it?
That is, yes. Yeah.
So what happens at the beginning of the first quarter of the 2004 Grand Final, David?
If this is the only time in the 8 or 9 years that there was a problem and it happened to be halfway through the first quarter of the 04 Grand Final.
Not good.
No. Not my fault, though, but I fixed it.
There is unbelievable footage, and so many of our supporters would have seen the Grand Final.
Yeah.
They flash to the box.
Yeah.
And we all know Choco can be quite animated.
Intense.
But he is going ballistic. And he's aiming it all at you, Dan.
Yes.
Tell us what went wrong.
And smacking his phone in front of me and giving me and I'm giving up putting the hand up.
Yeah. You at that stage would have loved social distancing.
Yes. Yes.
Get away, Choco. But tell us what went wrong.
Yeah, so look, it's a bit of a long story, but I won't go through it all now.
As RZA would say.
Yeah. So we were actually using a Motorola wireless headset system, which we hadn't used. Motorola had been trying to sell it to the club as the technology was coming into Australia.
So we're taking a risk, Grand Final.
Yeah. But there was some plans. There were some plans around it.
Okay.
So the technology was only approved because with all the shortwave and radio frequency stuff partway through the year, so we didn't purchase one. Because they weren't cheap back then, and the club was sort of sitting on the hands a little bit, but Choco liked the idea of it. So we'd had some trials with it, just the trainings and whatever, thought we'll look at it next year. Well, when the technology got approved, Richmond and Geelong were sponsored by Motorola, so they got got a set.
First go.
So they used it in the latter part of the season, and I think it was Richmond didn't make the finals. And so we got a call from Motorola on the eve of the finals. Hey, Richmond's system, it's been working really well. Do you guys want to use it in finals? Oh. So Choco puts it on to me. Huts, get it over here, and we'll test it training. We might use it in one of the earlier finals. If it works well, I've got visions of using it grand final day.
Wow.
So
we got vision, all right.
So we get it over, using it training here at Alberton, over at Amy Stadium, working pretty well. Do we want to use it? Because at Amy Stadium, we had a pretty good hardwired system. We had extra headsets because Choco liked a lot of people wired up.
Yeah. But we're not at Footy Park.
No, but we were. He didn't want to use it for the first final because we needed to use that first final. We wanted to, and we won the first final. Come against the preeps, so we get a home prelim, St Kilda. Yes. Let's use it. So I was even a bit nervous then.
Yeah.
But we did have the backup hardwired system.
Good.
Didn't have to revert to it. It was great that we had eight people, had a guy on the far side giving his observations to the coaches, what he's seeing.
Fantastic.
Andrew Russell, the fitness guy, had a set, so when he had to, or Peter Barnes, the doctor, if they had to take a player down to the rooms, they took headsets with them so they could talk to us from the rooms.
This is cutting edge.
It was, So
so it works well.
All worked well, really well.
Fantastic.
So Choco, all right, we'll bring them to Melbourne, we'll use them at the MCG. It's going to be even more useful there because the Ponsford stand's knocked over.
Yes.
So the coaches' boxes are on the opposite side of the ground, looking into the sun, so not great vision, lower level than where they normally were, and on the opposite side for where the interchange is.
Yeah.
So we can have people over both sides of the ground, we can have eight of us talking to each other. Great. So we had a training run on the Friday night, and myself and Alan Gill tested them, beautiful. And we had to stop because Guy Sebastian was practicing for his anthem and everything.
There wasn't 70,000 people though.
No, there wasn't.
Nah.
So but on the day, there's a crowd's building up, we're testing it all, working fine. Halfway through the first quarter and there's 70,000 people using their phones and everything, it's interfering with the radio frequency. And so Choco...
So you get nothing?
No, in fact, my headset was working better than Choco didn't want a headset on. He had a handset configuration.
Right.
And that was the thing that was... So he'd pick up the phone and Arnie and Alan Gill were down on the bench.
Right.
And they couldn't hear him. They kept having to ask him to repeat himself.
Oh,
and he didn't like that.
No.
So I was trying to tell him, go through me, we'll sort it out. And then it happened again and happened again. And we did have the backup, the hardwired system there, but we were in this cramped little room and it was all under his... I had to get under his legs to get it and I wasn't going to go crawling around his legs. So, and I had Gilly and Arnie telling me, tell Choco to calm down.
I'm thinking,
it's all right for you to say that on the other side of the ground. So I just said, pass the messages through me and we'll get it sorted at quarter time. So quarter time, we threw it to the back of the box and brought out the hardwired system.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, we had Tim Hart, who was helping the coaches out. He was up in the stand on the other side of the ground. He was still talking to us right through the second quarter. But he was cut off. He didn't hear the message that we're cutting off.
Oh, that is gold. We could talk all night, David, but we're not allowed to. So I tell you what, there's not too many people through Port Adelaide's 150 years could be called a gentleman. But David, I think you, David Donnie Osmond Hunton, are a gentleman of Port Adelaide. And thank you for being on Timmy G's Tyre Power Timer Show. Let's
Thanks,
have a shake hands.
Beautiful.